Our Country, the Marvel of Nations, Chapter 7, Chronology of the Government, When Must It Arise? Having become satisfied where the power symbolized by the two-horned beast must be located, we now inquire respecting the time when we may look for its development. At what period in this world's history is the rise of this power placed in the prophecy? On this point, as on the preceding, the foundation for the conclusions at which we must arrive is already laid in the facts elicited in reference to the preceding, or leopard, beast. It was at the time when this beast went into captivity, or was killed, politically, with the sword, verse 10, or, which we suppose to be the same thing, had one of its heads wounded to death, verse 3, that John saw the two-horned beast coming up. If the leopard beast, as we have conclusively proved, signifies the papacy, and the going into captivity met its fulfillment in the temporary overthrow of Popedom by the French in 1798, then we have the epoch definitely specified when we are to look for the rising of this power. The expression, coming up, must signify that the power to which it applies was but newly organized and was then just rising into prominence and influence. The power represented by this symbol must, then, be some power which in 1798 stood in this position before the world. That the leopard beast is a symbol of the papacy, there can be no question. But some may want more evidence that the wounding of one of its heads, or its going into captivity, was the overthrow of the papacy in 1798. This can easily be given. A nation being represented by a wild beast, the government of that nation, that by which it is controlled, must, as a very clear matter of course, be considered as answering to the head of the beast. The seven heads of this beast would therefore denote seven different governments, but all the heads pertain to one beast, and hence all these seven different forms of government pertain to one empire. But only one form of government can exist in a nation at one time. Hence, the seven heads must denote seven forms of government to appear, not simultaneously, but successively. But these heads pertain alike to the dragon and the leopard beast, from which this one conclusion only can be drawn, namely, that Rome, during its whole history, embracing both its pagan and papal phases, would change its form of government six times, presenting to the world seven different forms in all. And the historian records just that number as pertaining to Rome. Rome was ruled first by kings, secondly, by consuls, thirdly, by decemvirs, fourthly, by dictators, fifthly, by triumvirs, sixthly, by emperors, and seventhly, by popes. See American Encyclopedia. John saw one of these heads wounded, as it were, to death. Which one? Can we tell? Let it be noticed, first, that it is one of the heads of the beast which is wounded to death, and not one of the heads of the dragon. That is, it is some form of government which existed in Rome after the change of symbols from the dragon to the leopard beast. We then inquire, how many of the different forms of Roman government belonged absolutely to the dragon, or existed in Rome while it maintained its dragonic or pagan form? These same seven heads are again presented to John in Revelation 17, and the angel there explains that they are seven kings or forms of government, verse 10, and he informs John that five are fallen and one is. That is, five of these forms of government were already passed in John's day, and he was living under the sixth. Under what form did John live? Answer: the imperial. For it was the cruel decree of the emperor Domitian which banished him to the Isle of Patmos, where this vision was given. Kings, consuls, decemvirs, dictators, and triumvirs were all in the past in John's day. Emperors were then ruling the Roman world, and the empire was still pagan. Six of these heads, therefore, kings, consuls, decemvirs, dictators, triumvirs, and emperors, belonged to the dragon. For they all existed while Rome was pagan, and it was no one of these that was wounded to death. For had it been, John would have said, I saw one of the heads of the dragon wounded to death. The wound was inflicted after the empire had so changed in respect to its religion that it became necessary to represent it by the leopard beast. But the beast had only 7 heads, and if 6 of them pertained to the dragon, only 1 remained to have an existence after this change in the empire took place. After the emperors, the 6th and last head that existed in Rome in its dragonic form came the popes, the only head that existed after the empire had nominally become Christian. The Exarchate of Ravenna existed so short a space, Revelation 17, verse 10, that it has no place in the general enumeration of the heads. From these considerations, it is evident that the head which received the mortal wound was none other than the papal head. This conclusion cannot be shaken. We have now only to inquire when the papal head was wounded to death. It could not certainly be till after the papacy had reached that degree of development that caused it to be mentioned on the prophetic page. But after it was once established, the prophecy marked out for it an uninterrupted rule of 1,260 years, which, dating from its rise in 538, would extend to 1798. And right there the papacy was, for the time being, overthrown. General Berthier, by order of the French Directory, moved against the dominions of the Pope in January 1798. February 10th, he effected an entrance into the self-styled Eternal City, and on the 15th of the same month proclaimed the establishment of the Roman Republic. The Pope, after this deprivation of his authority, was conveyed to France as a prisoner and died at Valence, August 29th, 1799. This would have been the end of the papacy had this overthrow been permanent. The wound would have proved fatal had it not been healed. But though the wound was healed, the scar, to extend the figure a little, has ever since remained. A new pope was elected in 1800, and the papacy was restored, but only to a partial possession of its former privileges. Reverend George Crowley, A.M., speaking upon this point, says, "The extinction of torture and secrecy is the virtual extinction of the tribunal. The power of the Pope as a systematic persecutor has thus been annulled by the events growing out of the Republican era of 1793." Crowley on the Apocalypse, page 257. Let the reader look carefully at this event. It furnishes a complete fulfillment of the prophecy, and it is the only event in all Roman history which does this. For, though the first 6 heads were each in turn exterminated, or gave place to the succeeding head, of no one of them could it be said that it received a deadly wound, which was afterward healed. And as this overthrow of the papacy by the French military must be the wounding of the head mentioned in Revelation 13, verse 3, so, likewise, must it be the going into captivity and the killing with the sword mentioned in verse 10. For it is an event of the right nature to fulfill the prophecy, and one which occurred at the right time, namely, at the end of the time, times, and a half, the 42 months, or the 1,260 years. And no other event can be found answering to the record in these respects. We are not left, therefore, with any discretionary power in the application of this prophecy, for God, by His providence, has marked the era of its accomplishment in as plain a manner as though he had proclaimed with an audible voice, "Behold here the accomplishment of my prophetic word." Thus clearly is the exact time when we are to look for the rise of the two-horned beast indicated in the prophecy. For John, as soon as he beholds the captivity of the first, or leopard beast, says, "I beheld another beast coming up." And his use of the present participle, coming, clearly connects this view with the preceding verse, and shows it to be an event transpiring simultaneously with the going into captivity of the previous beast. If he had said, "I had seen another beast coming up," it would prove that when he saw it, it was coming up, but that the time when he beheld it was indefinitely in the past. If he had said, "I beheld another beast which had come up," it would prove that although his attention was called to it at the time when the first beast went into captivity, yet its rise was still indefinitely in the past. But when he says, "I beheld another beast coming up," it proves that when he turned his eyes from the captivity of the first beast, he saw another power just then in the process of rapid development among the nations of the earth. So then, about the year 1798, the star of that power which is symbolized by the two-horned beast must be seen rising over the horizon of the nations and claiming its place in the political heavens. In view of these considerations, it is useless to speak of this power as having arisen ages in the past. To attempt such an application is to show oneself utterly reckless in regard to the plainest statements of inspiration. Again, the work of the two-horned beast is plainly located, by verse 12, this side the captivity of the first beast and the healing of his wound. It is there stated, in direct terms, that the two-horned beast causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. But worship could not be rendered to a beast whose deadly wound was healed till after that healing was accomplished. This brings the worship which this two-horned beast enforces unmistakably within the 19th century. Says Elder J. Litch, Restitution, page 131. The two-horned beast is represented as a power existing and performing his part after the death and revival of the first beast. Mr. Wesley, in his notes on Revelation 13, written in 1754, says of the two-horned beast, "He has not yet come, though he cannot be far off, for he is to appear at the end of the 42 months of the first beast." We find three additional declarations in the book of Revelation which prove, in a general sense, that the two-horned beast performs his work with that generation of men who are to behold the closing up of all earthly scenes and the second coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, and these will complete the argument on this point. 1. The first is the message of the third angel, brought to view in the 14th of Revelation. It is not our purpose to enter into an exposition of the three messages of that chapter. We call the attention of the reader to only one fact, which must be apparent to all, and that is that the third of these messages is the last warning of danger and the last offer of mercy before the close of human probation. For the event which immediately follows is the appearance of one like the Son of Man, on a white cloud, coming to reap the harvest of the earth, verse 14. And this can represent nothing else but the second advent of the Lord from heaven. Whatever views, therefore, a person may take of the first and second messages, and at whatever time he may apply them, it is very certain that the third and last one covers the closing hours of time and reaches down to the second coming of Christ. And what is the burden of this message? It is a denunciation of the unmingled wrath of God against those who worship the beast and his image. But this worship of the beast and his image is the very practice which the two-horned beast endeavors to enforce upon the people. The third message, then, is a warning against the work of the two-horned beast. And as there would be no propriety in supposing this warning to be given after that work was performed, since it could appropriately be given only when the two-horned beast was about to enforce that worship, and while he was endeavoring to enforce it, and since the second coming of Christ immediately succeeds the proclamation of this message, it follows that the duties enjoined by this message and the decrees enforced by the two-horned beast constitute the last test to be brought to bear upon the world. And hence the two-horned beast performs his work, not ages in the past, but during the last generation of men to live before Christ's coming. 2. The second passage, showing that the work of the two-horned beast is performed just before the close of time, is found in Revelation 15, verse 2, which we have shown to refer to the same company spoken of in chapter 14, 1-5. Here is a company who have gained the victory over the beast and his image and the mark and the number of his name. In other words, they have been in direct conflict with the two-horned beast, which endeavors to enforce the worship of the beast and the reception of his mark. And these are redeemed from among men, Revelation 14, verse 4, or are translated from among the living at the second coming of Christ, 1 Corinthians 15, verse 51-52, 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 16-17. This again shows conclusively that it is the last generation which witnesses the work of this power. 3. The third passage is Revelation 19, verse 20, which speaks of the two-horned beast under the title of the false prophet, and mentions a point not given in Revelation 13, namely, the doom he is to meet. In the battle of the great day, which takes place in connection with the second coming of Christ, verses 11-19, the false prophet, or two-horned beast, is cast alive into a lake of fire burning with brimstone. And the word alive signifies that this power will be at that time a living power, performing its part in all its strength and vigor. This power is not to pass off the stage of action and be succeeded by another, but is to be a ruling power till destroyed by the King of Kings and Lord of Lords when he comes to dash the nations in pieces with a rod of iron. Psalm 2, verse 9, Daniel 2, verse 35. The sum of the argument, then, on this matter of chronology is this. The two-horned beast does not come into the field of this vision previous to the year 1798. It has its marvelous development after that time. It finishes its work while the last generation of men is living on the earth, and it comes up to the battle of the great day, a living power in the full vigor of its strength. As it was shown in the argument on the location of the two-horned beast, that we are limited in our application to the Western continent, so we are limited still further by its chronology. For it must not only be some power which arises this side of the Atlantic, but one which is seen coming up here at a particular time. Taking our stand, then, in the year 1798, the time indicated in the prophecy, we invite the careful attention of the reader to this question. What independent power in either North or South America was at that time coming up in a manner to answer to the conditions of the prophecy? All that part of North America lying to the north of us was under the dominion of Russia and Great Britain. Mexico, to the southwest, was a Spanish colony. Passing to South America, Brazil belonged to Portugal, and most of the other South American states were under Spanish control. In short, there was not then a single civilized, independent government in the New World, except our own United States. This nation, therefore, must be the one represented in the prophecy, for no other answers the specifications in the least degree. It has always taken the lead of all European settlements in this hemisphere. It was coming up at the exact time indicated in the prophecy. Like a lofty monument in a field all its own, we here behold the United States grandly overtowering all the continent. So far as God's providence works among the nations for the accomplishment of His purposes, it is visible in the development of this country as an agent to fulfill His word. On these two vital points of location and chronology, the arguments which show that our country is the one represented by the symbol of the two-horned beast of Revelation 13, verse 11 to 17, are absolutely conclusive. The author will esteem it a personal favor if the reader will be pleased to study with particular care the arguments and facts which show, so far as location and chronology are concerned, that the symbol with two horns like a lamb refers to the great nation on this side of the Atlantic, and that the United States of America is a subject of prophecy. These are points which all can consider in an unbiased manner. And if this country is a subject of prophecy, if here some of the great plans of God and of human history are to be worked out, all ought to know it, for all are concerned in it. Let not these points, therefore, be passed by without due study and care.